Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show. Sponsored by ESB. Working towards a brighter energy future. ESB.ie.
Now I'm joined by Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland. Ruth, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Nice to talk to you.
Now, we have a couple of topics which are preoccupying you at the moment. Coffee and climate change. Why is coffee cultivation so bad for the planet?
Well, coffee is one of these industries that's bad for the planet, but is also very vulnerable to climate change itself. And for those two reasons, I think I heard you chatting earlier, the price of coffee is going up everywhere. So obviously coffee is grown in places like Brazil and Ethiopia, and land gets cleared to grow coffee. So that's one of the big issues. It also uses a lot of water to grow coffee. So as we've seen with droughts and heat waves, that's affecting crops. On the other side of it, if you're a coffee farmer, climate change isn't very good for you either, because coffee likes those cool temperatures. And in fact, some diseases like coffee rust have got much worse with warm temperatures recently.
So on a number of fronts, coffee cultivation is bad for the planet. Are there species of coffee that might do better for us than the ones that we currently enjoy?
Yeah, well, you're exactly right, Pat. And science has been looking at this for a number of years. In fact, there's a guy in Kew Gardens in the UK who's been looking at this for about 20 years. And there was almost a mythology around a species of coffee called Stenophylla that grew in West Africa. And people heard that perhaps it tasted quite like Arabica, but would be much more resistant to temperature ranges, drought and pests. So Aaron and his team set out. It was almost Indiana Jones-like. They were in the jungles of Sierra Leone trying to find this plant. And in the end of 2018, they did find a plant, but unfortunately it had no fruit on it, none of those little berries that they could use to make coffee or to indeed grow it. But they kept going, working with locals. And just last year, they found enough near the Liberian border to make a 10-gram sample of coffee. And they took it back and they gave it to some expert tasters. And as I said, they were expecting to taste vinegar, and it was like tasting champagne. And in fact, they even fooled some of the world's leading coffee drinkers that they were drinking, really high quality Arabica coffee. So I think coffees like that could be a way that we could work with coffee farmers to keep a more sustainable stream of coffee coming into our coffee shops and cafes.
However, we've heard about the hamburgers grown in the lab that are like meat in every way and don't involve animals. So what about coffee? Yes. Can they grow coffee in the lab?
Well, just this week, actually, Pat, a research institute in Finland called VTT has produced lab-grown coffee. So, yeah, who knew? This was like science fiction a few years ago, and it's already becoming quite real. So they managed to culture cells from coffee, grow them in a big bio-fermenter, and roast them. Now, interestingly, they weren't actually able to swallow what they tried, because it's not allowed yet under the regulations for the work, but they were able to taste it. And apparently, it's somewhere between black tea and weak coffee at the moment, but they're hopeful that they can enhance it. And alongside that, we've already seen startups actually making coffee from things like plant food waste in the US. It's a big area of investment for companies there. So I don't know, maybe that old Irish brand of Irol with the chicory roots can be revived as we try and look for more sustainable ways to enjoy coffee.
Now, our other topic today is about the people in the dry robes swimming all the year round in the cold water. And it turns out they are right. It's good for them in so many ways.
I know, and I can put up my hand. I am one of them. We're going to be even more unbearable now, Pat, because in fact, new research published by the University of Copenhagen this week shows that men, it was a small sample of about 8 men who swam in cold water regularly, used up on average about 500 extra calories when they were exposed to cold in a 24-hour period. And this is sort of something we've thought might happen with cold water swimming for a while, but this is a first study showing it. And what the scientists focused in on was something called brown fat. And brown fat isn't kind of those extra little rolls that we might see on our body. In fact, it's a very specific type of fat that we used to think human adults didn't have. In fact, we thought babies were the only, we only had it when we were babies, because because babies can't shiver, so they need a way to keep warm. And this brown fat can actually produce heat, burn up energy and produce heat. But it seems now that actually humans do keep this brown fat. It's deep down in our kind of neck and shoulder areas. And it's perhaps that, you know, swimming in cold water seems to allow that brown fat to work better, to produce more heat from energy. And it could help perhaps to keep us lean and healthy if we have more brown fat and it's activated.
All right. Well, we must talk on another occasion, Ruth, about the other benefits of cold water and why some people find it perfectly reasonable, like yourself, to go into the ice cold water and enjoy a swim, and others cannot bear the notion. But we'll do that on another occasion. Dr. Ruth Freeman, Director of Science for Society at Science Foundation Ireland, and our interviewee regularly now on the Green Scene. Thank you very much for joining us.